What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that always has motive, mostly because we're called a podcast. It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Aaron Dacier.
I'm your host, Aaron Dacier, and he's both a person of interest and an interesting person. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He woke the bear from its sleep, but now he's crying when it tangoes. It's Ian!
You stole my favorite line from the movie. That's not even a saying.
In any culture.
Yeah.
That's not even a saying in any culture. It's good to have you back, Ian. How's stuff going?
Good to be back. I have a question. Do you have like a point where you start the live from a bunker? I feel like you start it earlier every time I get here.
No.
Like,
no,
I started way early. Like, no, really early.
No, that was the exact same point that okay. I always start it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'm good. Other than that,
I hate the way you started the podcast, yeah. I'm all good. No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all.
Mm-hmm.
We had to have you on because geographically, you're so close to Italy.
Wow. Although Missouri was mentioned way more than England.
That's right.
Which is beautiful.
You know what I love the most about that whole thing? Is everybody in the world wonders, what would it be like to live in Venice?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out everybody in Venice, do they want to live?
Missouri. Thank you very much.
two post-war Hungarians that currently live on the street that live in Venice would rather live
in
Missouri.
Don't take this from us. Ian, don't take this from us. How dare you? All we have is Jason. Ian, all we have is Jason Bourne's birthplace. We could use a little more.
Yeah, and I've only had that house pointed out. I'm Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's brother or something. I have that pointed out to me every time.
Yeah.
That's where Brad Pitt's brother live. Yeah. Doug Pitt, which I don't believe that's his name.
We just call him Doug.
Yeah.
You don't have to use the last name when you see him. Well, it's good to have you, whatever the case. We are going to talk about A Haunting in Venice, which does take place in Venice, Italy, and Equalizer 3, which, strangely enough, also in Italy. So it's a very Italian movie lineup today. We'll, of course, do a Best Ever Challenge. This time, Best Ever Kenneth Branagh Movies Acting. So movies in which Branagh has acted in.
Whoops.
And still time to shuffle them up, Ian.
Good job,
for the
Ian.
Graphics, there ain't.
Proud of you, buddy.
And then, of course, a buried treasure at the end. But no need to dilly-dally. Let's get to the hauntings with A Haunting in Venice.
Hercule Poirot, I've found something. I've looked at it from every which way. I am the smartest person I ever met, and I can't figure it out, so I came to the second.
You are up to something, my friend.
I've seen a million of these so-called psychics, each one a fake.
I do not believe in psychics.
Come with me to a seance. Spot the con I can't.
Detective, you are here to discredit me, but I can talk to the dead.
I'd give all I have to hear my daughter's voice.
If someone wants to be heard,
We are here. Listening.
Celebrated sleuth Hercule Poirot, now retired and living in self-imposed exile in Venice, reluctantly attends a Halloween seance at a decaying haunted palazzo. When one of the guests is murdered, the detective is thrust into a sinister world of shadows and secrets. This is the third movie in the Poirot series from Kenneth Branagh. And he gets to play the character once again with the double-decker mustache and all that comes along with it, that wonderful French accent that he loves.
Belgium accent. I've had to stop from cutting you off so many times. It's Hercule, no H, and he's from Belgium, not France.
I'm sorry, are we in America? You do understand, like, things are pronounced differently here, right?
They don't have to be.
I will correct all your English pronunciations on names from here on out.
Do it. Double day, yeah.
But yes, Hercule?
Hercule.
Hercule?
The Minky is the okay. Businessman.
Hercule, is that right? Hercule?
Yeah, whatever. Hercule. I don't know, I'm not okay. French.
Okay, I got it. Hercule Poirot.
No,
now retired. Beautiful. And living in Venice. Anyways, what did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was just okay? Ian?
It's all a bit silly. See what I did there? Silly. It's just okay.
Ian says just okay. Andrew?
Yeah.
I'm going just a little bit lower, low side of okay.
Low Close side of okay. It. Guys, I loved this movie.
I did not.
I really, really did. I had such a good time with this film.
I would have never bet that. That's fascinating. Well, that's I can't
fun.
Wait to hear. That's
no,
awesome.
That's fine.
Yeah,
I,
no, that's
I'm,
awesome.
I'm glad that you wouldn't. I was surprised to hear some more negative feedback online after I saw it, because I had such a good time with this movie. I think everybody is so well cast. It is a perfect murder mystery, in my opinion, in the way that it treats its characters, its clues, all those kind of things. It was so much fun and so good for me. I knew exactly what happened, like, from like the first clue they dropped about it, and still loved the entire thing. Like, it was just like, it had me in its palm. I like how it was shot. I like how creepy it was. I am in love with the sense of humor of these movies, and really, really just like those little bits and pieces. I thought the Tina Fey, Hercule Poirot stuff really worked well. So, I had a really good time with it. What are some of the things you guys liked about it, about this one? Andrew, why don't you start?
I want to talk about performances. Not everybody was good. There's a couple that I question the casting of certain people. But Jude Hill was amazing in this. Again, he is Jamie Dornan's son for the second movie that we've seen. Belfast. He was really, really good in this one. Also, Kenneth Branagh, he has a way of just losing himself in this role. And I love that about him. It reminds me a lot of how Daniel Craig loses himself in Benoit Blanc. Is that how you correctly pronounce that, Ian? Benoit Blanc?
That's actually Benoit White.
Benoit White. Okay. Benoit Blanc. But no, I love the way that he just immerses himself, because whenever I'm watching these movies, I don't see Kenneth Branagh up there. I do see Poirot.
I've done it! I've ruined you all! Yes!
It's Hercule Poirot. There you
Poirot.
Go. Hercule.
Slight roll on the arm.
That's my first pro, is that I like some of the performances. There are some really impressive. And I guess my next pro would be that I feel you can kind of lose yourself in this environment fairly easily.
Ian, do you have anything good to say about the movie?
Oh, yeah, no, plenty. Like, I didn't end up in didn't like it.
That's true. You both said it was okay. Andrew, a little lower than okay, but on the lower side of okay, I mean.
This is the second movie in a row where I haven't necessarily had a great time with the movie, but been kept in my seat and with a huge smile on my face by Kenneth Branagh's Poirot. He is incredible. When I watched Murder on the Orient Express, I was so skeptical because David Suchet is, or Suchet, is my Poirot. Like, he has done, I think he's done every single Agatha Christie Poirot story, and he's incredible, so nothing could compare. And then Kenneth Branagh comes and just blows it out of the park for me with his own take on him that's really confident and really unique. And this is, I think I like him the most in this movie. I completely agree with you, Aaron. The humor is spot on. The bounce back between him and Tina Fey, considering this is the first movie we've seen her in, mm-hmm. it's like she's been there for all three. Like, their chemistry is excellent. The humor is spot on. I'm really glad how much time we had with Poirot in this movie. It's by far and away the most entertaining part for me, which is good considering it's his movie. That's a relief. Yeah.
Yes, it should be a starting place.
Yeah, I still want more of these movies. He's excellent.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I come down to. And again, I did love this movie, and I actually think it's as good as the first one. I love both the first and the third. I think the second is a pretty big miss, and we reviewed it here. We've talked about it before. But I really did feel like this was back to form. And one of the things I really liked here that I really didn't like in the second one is I think the themes that they were going for in this one locked in a lot better for me than the second one. They felt a little more forced in the second one, a little more overt and try-hardy, mm-hmm. if you will. The mustache stuff, you know, like shaving them, like
completely unrelated to anything.
Well, they thought it was related. Like, yeah. Like they're trying to do something there. But here, I really like that the journey he's going through is his own haunting. He is haunted by this past version of him. Tina Fey mm-hmm. is in a way trying to seance to bring him back from the dead. Like, there's this real idea that what Poirot is going through kind of mirrors the afterlife in some ways. He's in his afterlife and is trying not to be brought back, mm-hmm. you know, to the world. And then, of course, the movie... You know what? I was just going to say how the movie ends, but that would be spoiling it. So not going to do that. Let's just say it works with the theme, right? Like there's a mm-hmm. real theme where there's a
the Ghostbusters all come back from the dead and they wrap right. they wrap up the mystery.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's great. They have a full garden of these, you know, ghost traps that are linked mm-hmm. together. It's mm-hmm. it's wild. Yeah. You'd have never predicted it. So anyhow, that is, and again, if you know me, which you probably do. The theme is always going to weigh heavily on me, and because it worked so well for me, that's really one of the reasons I love the movie. So, what are some of your other thoughts? Good, bad, whatever. Let's get into it. What are some of the things that you other things that you love, or things that you know kept you from really loving it? Those kind of things.
There are moments in this movie that the movie thinks it's being Shutter Island, when in reality it comes across as Disney's Haunted Mansion. Like, the haunting stuff didn't work for me in this movie. I thought that this movie thought it was being a lot creepier and, you know, terrifying than it actually was. Like, there were people in my theater who were actually kind of giggling at some of the jump scare stuff, like how silly some of them felt. So, yeah, if this is supposed to be the scariest of all of Agatha Christie's, it's not the fact that I don't like haunted, you know, scary movies, because this isn't a scary movie, I don't think. I think it's a straight up whodunit film. But I think that the movie wants you to think that it's a horror film, too.
I don't know if the movie wants you to think it's a horror film. I think it wants you to feel the tone.
A suspense thriller.
I think it wants you to feel the you know, the tonal shift. Yeah, I think expectations probably play a lot into that. I was not expecting it to be a scary movie or a horror movie. I was expecting it to be a spiritually themed murder mystery, you know, like to deal with the other side. So I can see how you would look at some of those moments and think they're a little bit, you know, amusement park ride or whatever the case may be. For me, my expectations were on the murder mystery. So for me, it was just part of this is... Like, I wasn't scared, but then again, I'm not necessarily scared at a lot of movies. And I didn't feel like the movie wanted me to be scared as much as it wanted to put me in a different atmosphere or tone. But yeah, I can see that perspective for sure. Ian?
For me, that's the part of the movie that didn't work. the most for me and was the most distracting. It felt like, hey, we have an opportunity to do a horror adjacent Poirot where we can jump genres a little bit, but it was really distracting for me. So like the Dutch angles, the jump scares, that flipping parrot that would just out of nowhere. For
that's
me,
what people were laughing at.
That, and it's, you make a good point, Aaron. Like, it is just the shift of tone, and it is the movie, like, having the opportunity to put us in that environment. But for me, I think it crossed too far into seriously trying to be horror. Like, I think the movie was trying to scare us and to be spooky, but it just didn't work for me. It felt really, really distracting. There isn't an element to the story that rescues it a little bit that I don't want to spoil, but overall, that being a horror movie thing just didn't work for me.
I think the element you're talking about, if I'm guessing correctly, I wonder if that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is we're dealing with a movie that is making a point about spiritualism in some ways, in seances and those kind of things, and is doing it in a way where the clues to the murder mystery are the primary thing, right? So they're creating a world where they can't do a typical horror movie scare that doesn't fit in with the murder mystery they're presenting. I'm trying to walk around this a little bit.
I get it.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So I wonder if they're kind of handcuffed to do what they do, because their point is to create, you know, a legitimate murder mystery that works, which I think they did. I think the murder mystery part of this really holds together when you think back on it.
Well, I mean, but that's the part the movie didn't get to pick. But
this is stuff I don't know, because I was under the impression, like with the first couple, that they changed some stuff.
Oh, honestly, I don't know. I know it's based on one of her stories. I don't know if anything.
My understanding was that they are tweaking these stories.
Okay, that may well be right.
It may well be wrong as well, but that's just what I remember hearing. We need a fact checker or somebody on this.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had that on here?
From what I remember, I don't think they changed Murder on the Orient Express that much. It seemed to be... But that's the only one that I've read. Okay. I haven't read any of the other ones.
Okay.
But then again, it's been forever since I've read that book.
Take everything we say with an entire pillar of salt. Yes.
An entire spooky pillar of salt.
Yeah.
So much salt.
So... I want to push back a little bit on what you said, Aaron, because I agree, you have to have some of those jump scare moments because the characters are being jump scared as much as we are. But there are some editing choices with the sudden noises and the increase in like that shrieking score that happens when a door slams open. The parrot flying. Yeah, the parrot flying at you, which has nothing to do with anything.
It's Poirot. I don't know if you don't understand. How the pronunciation works.
It's how it's pronounced in America.
The cockatiel.
Hercules parrot.
whoa, Ian. Whoa, settle down.
Oh, goodness. The avian, the non-avian dinosaur. No, the dinosaur flies. That kind of stuff has nothing to do with the story. That, for me, felt like, ooh, this is one of our opportunities. Like, it's not often we're going to have Poirot in a... Conjuring type environment, so let's make the most of it and let's get some of those horror jump scares. And it's no coincidence that this is coming out in the middle of September leading up to Halloween as well, so I think I'm not giving the movie in that much credit. I think they are trying to tap into the horror crowd, and I think it's to the detriment of the murder mystery for me.
I do wonder how much is intentional. I do wonder how much of it is intended to be like an amusement park ride. Like, how much of it is a way to echo a seance where it's like an amusement, you know, park ride that there's somebody in the chimney and it's, you know, it seems silly and fake because it is, you know, silly and fake or whatever.
For
you know?
Seance, that makes complete sense because it's so easy for Parrot to unravel the whole thing so quickly and so immediately. So yeah, that I completely buy. But the stuff that happens after that, it felt a bit more like taking advantage of the opportunity.
I do love that we got a double denouement, which is self-contradictory, I believe. But but like that we get two instant. It's like Glass Onion had this too, where we get two big like explanation scenes from our favorite detective in the same movie.
It was brilliant. I kind of wanted the movie to end there. I was like, this is all I came for. I just didn't want Poirot to end up a quote unquote believer. Like, yeah, I could have left.
Makes sense.
Half an hour movie done.
Yeah.
That part didn't make sense to me, and I'm going to try and talk around it as best I can, because he proved his point after, like, in that moment, like, when he went to the chimney and stuff like that. He proved his point, and yet there were still people believing.
Oh, Andrew. You poor soul. You think facts are going to change people's minds? Yeah, I kid you not. The psychic herself, Michelle Yeoh, could have said, I am taking the mickey here. I am lying. And the exact same people in that room would have said, no, but you just don't know it. You are a psychic, but you don't know it.
And the movie makes a point of this, by the way, with the brother character. The brother character who says, no, she's like, he does the tricks for her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
and he believes. Yeah.
And exactly. Still believes.
This is just to butter it up. This is just to convince the people that don't believe.
So the movie is making that point as well, that, you know, people believe what they want to believe or need to believe.
Mm-hmm. So. It's the Mulder effect.
Yes, I want to believe. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts on Haunting in Venice?
No post-credit scene.
That is true. That is true.
It's beautiful. Like I didn't like the Dutch angles and whatnot and all of that stuff, but I mean, yeah, Venice is beautiful.
I kind of liked the Dutch angles. Can we talk about them for a second?
Of course.
The movie throws them in our face, like right at the beginning. Like
from the beginning.
But I kind of loved it because, again, like a lot in this movie. Okay, so I'm probably giving credit where credit isn't due. That is probably happening here. But this movie seemed to be like, I know what I'm doing. These are severe Dutch angles, but look how it's framed. Like the framing on them was so interesting. The statues and the seagull and, you know, all leading up to that first, you know, wake scare, you know, that we have or whatever. I really liked all that stuff.
The shots that I really liked were the stationary ones. There are some shot compositions in this movie that are chef's kiss, so good. For me, the Dutch angles are some of the worst parts of horror. So, like, if you're going to do a horror thing, I didn't like that the movie incorporated that in. I was like, you're picking the wrong bits from the genre to make this what I personally like about horror and want to have in here.
I need to look this up, and so I'm going to. But I am almost sure that this was the aspect ratio on this was 5:3.
It did feel different.
I think this was like, which by the way, I just recently did research on this. But the 5:3.
No, you knew this. Don't you explain this away.
Sure. Okay. My vast cinema knowledge, aspect ratio is always my favorite thing to look at. The 5:3 ratio is a European ratio. It is European cinema used 5:3. Back in the day when the US was using 4:3. 4:3 is what you're used to on the square televisions kind of thing. 5:3 is a little bit wider, but not quite as wide as the 1.771 or, you know, 2.161. Is that the really ultra wide one? Whatever. Listen, I don't know any of this stuff. But anyways, they talked about 5:3 being this really great way to build atmosphere and close-ups because of the way it locks the screen down a little bit and you don't have to worry about like the rule of thirds when you're in expanded and how far they go towards the side. So you can have like bigger close-ups because everything looks good. Everything you put in 5:3 feels like it locks into like the rule of thirds and different things.
It definitely
things like
felt that.
That
way.
So like a Rear Window was shot in 5:3. Just as an example. I found that really interesting. And again, I didn't quite have a chance to Google the ratio. I mean, I could be totally wrong about that.
Well, you Google, because I do have one other camera thing that I really liked. And it is, there's a shot where Poirot was at his most confused and spooked. And they do this, like, I can't remember what it's called. It's like a body cam, steady cam thing that's attached to his body. And it just gives this, like, a visceral feeling as he's running through the house and we're just focused on his face as he's like jogging. And that's just a thing. Yeah, it's just a thing I didn't... Well, it's not POV because we're looking at him, not his POV. It's the opposite. We're kind of focused on him as he's running. And it's just not a shot that I expected
Poirot movie.
Okay. I really liked it. That, for me, worked really well as showing how unsettled he was rather than the Dutch angles and jump scares.
So confirmation, it is enclosed a little bit more, but it's 1.851, which is more like 5.5 3.
You fool.
So it's a little wider than 5.3.
I'm not interested then.
But it's
not,
definitely an intentional, European. It's definitely an intentional thing he did for this movie to close it in a little bit more, take advantage of those close-ups. And that I think the sense. Movie's better for it. I think the cinematography is just gorgeous. So, yeah. Well, there you go. That is our thoughts on A Haunting in Venice. That is available in theaters, and who knows for how long, but I recommend checking it out. You guys, would you give it a recommend, even though you just kind of liked it?
Or you thought it was okay? If you like Poirot films, yes, absolutely, because this is still a good Kenneth Branagh Poirot film, for sure.
It's better than the second one. It's not as good as the first one.
I've had ingrowing toenails that are better than the second one.
It's an amazing movie. It's an amazing movie. Yeah. All right, let's continue on. Let's talk about Equalizer 3.
Ciao, Roberto.
Roberto, tell me, what did you do back home?
Government work. I'm retired, man.
Because of these people, I'm beginning to understand real peace.
Oh. They see you as one of us now.
I believe this is where I'm supposed to be.
This happens in many towns. The mafia. They're like cancer. No cure.
Robert McCall finds himself at home in southern Italy, but he discovers his friends are under the control of a ghost. No, a local crime boss.
Wait, what?
As events turn deadly, McCall knows what he has to do. Become his friend's protector by taking on the mafia. Denzel coming back to play this character one more time. What did you guys think about The Equalizer 3? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was just okay? Andrew.
Didn't see it.
Ian.
You know where I am on this because I watched this a couple of weeks ago. High side of liked it.
High side of liked it. I wondered if you'd creep into loved it. I wondered if you'd
creep into. Not quite. Not quite there. Over time, maybe.
I'm on the low side of liked it, so I liked it as well. Yes, it is correct. Andrew, you did not get a chance to see this.
I did see the first one.
But did you see the second one?
No.
Okay, all right. Ian, have you seen the first and the second one?
I watched the first and the second the day before going to see the third. And
smart man.
I think that really helps.
Yeah.
But I remember enjoying the first, and I hadn't seen the second.
The first one was really good.
The first one is incredible. That last scene with the song's called Vengeance, and that's playing as he goes through the Home Depot Home Alone. It's so good. Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah. I've seen the first and the second. I don't know if it's a hot take. I think the second is even better than the first, and I think the first
You're
is
wrong.
pretty good. Do you not like the second, or you just don't think it's better than the first?
I don't think it's better than the first. It's fine. It's fine, but it's for me, it fell quite a few notches down from the first.
I like what it's doing. Let's talk about this third one then. Ian, you liked it a little bit more than me, so talk about what you loved about this one.
A lot of what I like about this one is what I didn't like about the last one. For me, the second one was taking on too many themes and had its fingers in too many pies, and for me, lost some of the personal mission that he had. This, even more than the first one, I get why A, he's reluctant to fight, and B, why he has to fight. And you get those two things nailed in with this character, and I'm all in. Like, it absolutely gets that right. He is here to live a peaceful life and to fully retire. And even the way he picks the village feels authentic. And it very much picks him and how things go sideways.
I was going to say, it wasn't my interpretation that he was looking to retire.
No. Okay, so okay. I didn't mean, if I said that, I didn't mean to. Okay. More that he right. ends up retiring here and finds the place that he's supposed to be. And just the way that turns on its head into him choosing violence and defending a new place that he's found. It just felt so authentic. This wasn't like, it's fine if he defends a stranger and comes to their rescue. It feels even more authentic to me if I get why he cares and why he's doing what he's doing. There's a couple of elements that are missing that I would have liked to see, but overall, that core story of why he's doing what he's doing, I had goosebumps throughout most of the film. I enjoyed it so much.
I'm interested to hear what you think is missing. I agree. I think the biggest thing this movie has going for it is that it is a really well-structured character story.
Yes.
It is like you are in league with the McCall character from beginning to end. You understand all of his motivations. You know exactly where he is. The movie isn't trying to do what so many modern movies do, where it's like, oh, what if this guy's actually a bad guy? You know, or, oh,
what, what if there's some secret society that's coming after him that he was a member of, like going the John Wick route.
Right.
It still keeps it so really tight.
It's interesting to me to just see a movie just go, we know what we are. We are a vigilante story. That's what this is. This is a man who is a vigilante. This is, I really think this is a superhero movie. I believe that what we're dealing with here comes from the same place Superman comes from, which is, we know there are bad guys doing bad stuff. It happens. I feel powerless. I don't know how to stop that. I don't have the skills or the desire to be violent. I don't know what to do. Superman can save us. Like, you know, it really kind of comes from that same place and then mixes in the Batman vigilante thing. Like, it's...
This is a better Dark Knight Rises than the Dark Knight Rises. It truly is.
So I think this is a superhero movie in that way, in that this is a character that we get behind and we find ourselves rooting for because they are the one who has come to save us. It's a savior story. You know, there's a savior element to it. And so, I think that's where the movie succeeds the best, I think, is really painting that picture. These movies have all helped us understand, like, the people he is hurting / killing are all bad people. And I have my own philosophical issues with the idea of a person being completely bad or completely good. Which this movie kind of touches on a little bit, actually, with an interesting, like...
oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Question about, are you a good person or a bad person?
Yeah, I loved that.
But the movie is very content to go, oh, no. These people are all just bad people. They're just all, like, completely 100% evil people.
These are cartoon villains.
These are people that deserve to die. I need you to know this. They all deserve to die. He's doing a good... By slicing their throats. Like that.
Short of them, like, killing puppies on screen, there's not much. There's no nuance to the bad guys
nuance.
In this movie.
No nuance, which I think has philosophical ramifications as we live our lives, especially in a polarized society. I do think that has negative ramifications. However, the movie plays that in a way that I think really works if you're going to see a compelling story. I believe this is absolutely a compelling story. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the best thing the movie has going for it.
I almost think the movie doesn't give itself enough credit that we'll root for McCall, even if these guys aren't 100% bad. Like, they don't have to be cartoon villains. I get it. They have to be...
I think they do.
You think they have to be undeniably evil.
I don't think it works
if
they're nuanced.
You might be right. As I was saying it, you might be right. But... Yeah. I just know that I would be rooting for him if he was probably killing good guys. I'm the problem.
So let's get into that part of it, which I think hits you better than it hits me, which is the, oh my goodness, how cool is the way he's killing people, which is, you know.
I'm not saying
I don't have that part in me. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I usually listen to that part and go, no, that's not a good part of me. Let's quiet that part, you know.
Well, that's exactly how I went into this movie, because the third time out, like, that works great in the first film because it's unique, it's new, and there's a lot of stuff in that first film that I really like some technical things they do that I really like. By the time we get to the third entry, I'm like, I need something more. If you're going to make a third movie out of this, I need more than the I know Kung Fu stuff. Having said that, it's still done so well in this movie. There's not a huge amount of I know Kung Fu. But what he does do, specifically the first big showdown when they're in that restaurant, and how he dominates that man and his henchmen with words as much as force, is incredible. And I was like, ah, you got me. Dang it, movie. You got me with your equalizing. It's so good. The fighting isn't my favorite part of this movie at all. I don't think it's done as well as the first one. But how it's used, there's enough of it in there for me to still recognize this as the Equalizer brand. But the fact that it focuses on this tight story in the third entry, like, the temptation is always to go bigger, 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 bigger. This is the smallest story. I know he's taking on the whole of the Italian mafia, but put that to one side. At its core, this is the smallest story that I think we've seen them do.
It's such a beautiful and natural way that we get into the plot, too.
Like, yes.
And the bookend of our entry into what's going on is what the movie is trying to say. It's, you know, the idea of what's in the duffel bag, and that's all I'll say, is the heart and soul of this character is what's in the duffel bag.
It's so and good.
So, yeah, and it is. It's really good. And it's that stuff I'm just like, oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he could arrest people, you know?
I wish he didn't have to literally murder them. I like this movie just kept surprising me because we open without giving too much away. Something big happens at the beginning, and I kind of felt we're gonna slump a bit here and have to wait until we get back into what I want to see. But it uses that time so well. I just wanted an entire movie of it. I didn't care if we ever got to the fighting. Like, I loved watching his adjustment to this Italian village. Just so well done. Such a hard trick to pull off.
How did you feel about Dakota Fanning and the stuff around her character?
She was in this movie.
I think it's the weakest part of the movie. I don't think she's the weakest part of the movie.
No.
I think she's great. And in fact, this is a different kind of role than I think I've ever really, you know, seen her do. And I really kind of liked her in this. I just think that stuff feels tacked on. I think that you could have the bookends without it, and you could have everything else without it, and the movie is just as good and maybe even a little more focused.
I know.
The only thing I can think is they're setting up future movies, maybe? Like this some sort of team kind of thing?
Maybe, but I didn't feel that. It felt more like...
Because David Denman's not a bad actor either. And, like, he's barely in this. So,
What was the runtime on this? It was, like, the shortest of all of them, wasn't it?
149.
145?
149,
almost feel like it was a little runtime paddy. Like, they have this core story, and they had some extra time to do something else. And it is tied into the core of his character, but it still feels tacked in, and it's an extra bit of heart that it didn't need.
No, it doesn't need it. I will say I really did like their first cafe scene together. Yes. I thought the dialogue in that scene was really fun and sharp.
Well, it's Denzel delivering it as well, like just reading the phone book.
Yeah, I do wonder if they're setting up a team here with him and her.
I'd be here for it. Yeah, so. I'd be here for it. I think we're kind of used to her stealing the stage and like stealing every movie that she's in, that when she does something that's pretty normal like this, we're like, huh, what happened? But she's fine. She's doing exactly what she needs to do. I don't feel like the story needed it. It felt out of place.
I will also say, and then Andrew, I want to hear like any questions that you have for us, but I will also say this movie is not without tropes. There are plenty of tropey things that happen that lead, you know, to situations where how is this bad guy not shot his gun yet? You know, like that kind of, like there's
I've hyped this up way more than you can never possibly like it as much as I've talked about it.
So there are plenty of action tropes in this movie. You know, I will also say, just to put it in there, that my biases also keep me probably from loving a movie like this and when it deals with violence and my own pacifism and especially gun violence. Although the creativity here is what I'm talking about, as opposed to just taking a gun and just, you know, shooting a bunch of people. Guns are used to kill here, not just with bullets. That's what I'm saying.
yes.
Andrew, any questions you have for us?
Yeah, something that I really enjoyed about the first film, and maybe you can tell me if this is expanded on in the second or the third film, is the fact that we don't know anything about this guy. He is a complete mystery in that first film. Unlike John Wick, who is, I think, the biggest or the easiest comparison, you know, the John Wick franchise and the Equalizer franchise, from what I've seen, anyway. But I love the fact that how in Equalizer, we don't get that exposition drop from, you know, the mob. Like, he was, you know, an assassin for a long time, and then he went his own way because he fell in love with his wife. We don't get, you know, a story like that in the first one. Is anything expanded to where you kind of get to know Robert a little bit more in the second or the third movie, or do they keep it a secret?
Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, you get a little bit of that in the second one. That's kind of, a lot of the second one is about his mentor and the person that helped him get out of the job that he was in. So the second one is your movie for that. But again, I think it's to the movie's detriment, to be honest.
No, that's what I was going to say. I didn't want to know. Yeah, I didn't want to know about him.
I'm fine with the story itself, but I think it's telling us something I didn't need to know. The third movie, a small smidgen, but really not much at all. No, that's mainly the second movie's job.
Because I really enjoyed the mystery of him. You know, the mystery, not knowing anything about him, is what made him seem that much more dangerous.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, yeah.
I think the Equalizer, we've done a lot of weird Wick comparisons, but I'll keep going with them. I think the Equalizer does a better job at maintaining what John Wick did in the first movie that it kind of dropped for the other movies. Like, this feels like a John Wick 1 movie. Like, it just feels like there's, the motivations are clear, the story is compelling. It's not just all about the violence scenes. And it can, there's only like 3, maybe 4 of them. So, and they're big set pieces, and, you know, they're cool, stabby violence stuff. Like, they really do go for it, but the human stuff is here in a way that I think, personally, I think the John Wick movies have lost, because they're trying to do more fantasy world building, whatever they're trying to do. But this series has kept it in an interesting way. And I don't think it's gone too heavy on his exposition. I still think he's a man of mystery. I don't think we know a ton about him. There are some connections this movie has to the other movies. I won't give those away. But if you have watched the other movies, there will be story reveals and things that may be interesting to you. So, but that's not the heart of this movie. That's just a part
to its benefit.
Yeah. Anything else?
There's no post-credit scene.
Is there a post-credit scene?
There isn't.
I really enjoyed the cinematography and the way that Antoine Fuqua captured the cinematographic style. I can't talk today, sorry. Was just gorgeous in that first film, the way he would do quick close-ups on objects or slow down time a little bit. Is it still just as beautiful as the first one was?
Well, at the top I mentioned one of my negatives. It's missing some of that for me. The unique, quote-unquote, gimmicky stuff from the first one, where you do the close-up on his eye, and he does his little stopwatch, and you slow down time, and you see that he's doing almost like the Sherlock Holmes, thinking about each step before he does it. There is a little bit of that in this, but it's mostly gone. It's mostly been abandoned, from what I could tell.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. Maybe they felt it was too gimmicky or too samey at this point. But it is missing from this movie.
You almost do the workout by yourself, though. You almost, like, they will show him staring. Like, he has such a presence. And, and so you almost, like, do the work yourself of what he's figuring out and what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And it might be a smarter move than I thought. If that was in this movie, I might be saying, oh, I'm done with it now. I'm tired. So you don't kind of know what you miss sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. That is The Equalizer 3, also in theaters. You can check that out. I think that's a recommend from both Ian and I to check that out. It is very violent, so just be aware of that. On to the best ever challenge. But before we do, A big thank you to our amazing Sift Pop members. Thank you for being a part of what goes on here at Sift Pop by supporting. Starts at $3 a month. You can check that out at patreon.com/siftpop if you'd like to do that. And lots of fun stuff you get there. We do a pre-show that you have access to at different levels. You can check it all out at patreon.com/siftpop.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
All right, let's get into the best ever challenge. Best ever Kenneth Branagh movies, acting movies. So we will go number five to number one. If somebody has it higher, we will
drop.
We will make sure that we wait till whoever has it the highest gets to talk about it. Let's start with you, Ian. What is your number five Kenneth Branagh movie?
The Road to El Dorado.
Oh, interesting.
He's in it somewhere. I haven't mentioned. I haven't seen it in a long, long time, but I remember liking it. Full disclosure, unless I've missed something, I've seen six Kenneth Branagh movies that he's acted in. So I really hate one of them. So this was always going to be on the list somewhere. So yeah, number five. It's a fine DreamWorks. I wish they'd carried on along the Prince of Egypt line, but they didn't. And this is fun.
Yeah. They were like, oh, let's not do hand-drawn anymore. So, yeah.
Let's do fart jokes instead. I like this movie.
It's a good pick.
Yeah, it's fun.
Very nice. Andrew, why don't you go next?
This is where I have Valkyrie.
Nice.
Trump! Sorry, that's way late.
Trump! My number five is Tenet.
Yeah, if you would have been
Trump! All right, Ian, back to you. Six. What's your number four?
Number four is Valkyrie. We can talk about it now, Andrew.
Hey!
Yeah, good. Goodness gracious. I like this movie a lot. When it came out, I was like, wait a second. Tom Cruise is playing a German. That's weird. So weird. I'm choking on my words. But this is a fascinating story to me. An attempt to bomb Hitler from inside his own party army. I think it's a really, really, really well done movie. Really suspenseful. That scene with the bomb in the briefcase and pulling off that plan is excellent. I enjoy it a lot.
All right. What about you, Andrew? What's your number four?
My number four, this is where I have Murder on the Orient Express.
Nice. That was in my honorable mentions.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Hang on. Trump. Did you not want to talk about Valkyrie?
I'll talk about Valkyrie real quick.
Go for it. Talk about Valkyrie.
I think that Valkyrie, for me, it was on a second viewing that I really started to appreciate this movie. Like, I kind of liked it the first time. I think maybe I was just overwhelmed because so much happens in this movie by the time you get to the ending, it's just insane. But on that second viewing, you really appreciate the acting, not only from Tom Cruise, but like the rest of that cast is extraordinary, including Kenneth Branagh. So I highly, highly recommend Valkyrie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unlike any other war movie you're likely to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. All right. I don't think anybody's trumping my number four. Number four, I had Much Ado About Nothing.
I knew it.
I had to pick the only movie on my list that includes both Kenneth Branagh and Denzel Washington. They're both in this movie together. So this is a great Shakespeare adaptation. I think it's really funny. I think Robert Sean Leonard is great in it. Keanu Reeves is also in it. And then there are other people who are great in it. Michael Keaton is great in it. There's so many people in this movie. And it's just a lot of fun. So check
it
out.
His mustache looks so wrong. It's not right. He's not growing it right.
Check out Much Ado About Nothing. It's a classic and it's really, really good. So, yep.
Nice.
All right. On to our number threes. What do you got?
Murder on the Orient Express. Andrew, why don't you go first? Just going to one up you each time.
That's where
he's
that
waiting to hear what you say, and then he's putting that at his next number. That's yes. How this is working.
Yeah.
Tell us why you like MOTOE. Mm-hmm. Moto, as we call it in the industry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ian.
Oh, me? I was waiting for Andrew to go.
No,
sorry.
You
I keep stealing
his
thunder.
The person who has it higher talks about it.
Oh,
first.
Is that how this works? Yes. I haven't been on this show before.
I was just going to say, have you ever been on this show?
As I said before, it was a pleasant surprise. An incredibly stacked cast, which is like one of the things that drew me, what made me watch it, was that I was like, if nothing else, I'm going to see some incredible actors do some shit. With Kenneth Branagh leading them. And yeah, I think it's really gripping. When he loses his proverbials at how everyone is a bugger and everyone is just not nice and they're liars and criminals and the whole shoot me now, just it's so good. Like he just goes full Poirot in his first outing and it's so good.
It is so very good. Andrew, talk about it.
Yeah, it's a feat to make a movie that a lot of people have seen the original version of still like suspenseful. Like I knew the ending. I think a lot of people knew the ending to this movie because I think it's Agatha Christie's most famous book. I could be wrong on that.
I think so.
But so a lot of people know how it ends, but for me to still be there white knuckling as I'm watching this movie,
right.
It's a testament to the writing, the acting. It's just It's an achievement. It really is.
I agree. Good stuff. Very, very good stuff. It definitely was in my honorable mentions. My number three is another one I don't think anybody has. You're just lucky I didn't put it at number one. Number three is where I have Swing Kids.
Haven't seen it.
Kenneth Branagh is in Swing Kids. I just realized, Ian, like I need to, that needs to be like the first movie we watch when you're in town next time.
Yeah? Okay.
Just to see Robert Sean Leonard theme.
Well, you're on a Robert Sean Leonard kick, aren't you? Look at that.
And Christian Bale singing, dancing. I went into Newsies there for a second. Christian Bale singing in Newsies. No, this is dancing. This is the most interesting way I've ever seen a movie fight the Nazis through swing dancing. So
amazing.
So yeah, highly excited for you to check it out if you've never seen it. You may have to do some digging for it. I do not believe there's ever been a high def release of this movie.
Really? I'm not going to watch it with you then.
It's really, really good. Good upscaling. Good upscaling on my TV. So you should be all set. All right, let's get on to our number twos. What do you got, Ian?
What about my number three?
Yeah, I haven't trumped him yet. You got to wait for me to trump him.
No.
I just, I mean, I guess I just assumed that you'd been trumped with your number three. Yeah. What is your number three, Andrew?
You ready, Ian?
Uh-huh, I'm ready.
All right. Tenet.
Oh, hell no. No. Not on my list.
That was the one trumped me with. This is where I have Tenet. So talk about Tenet.
Okay, yeah. It's not my favorite Christopher Nolan film. I think that this is the movie you could say that he really overestimated the audience's ability to follow along with the complexity of his stories. But having said that, some of the best visuals I've ever seen in movies are in this, especially like the scene where they blow up a building in reverse time and then they show it in real time right afterwards. It's one of the coolest scenes.
Well, they blow the same building up in two different time directions at the same time.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I just probably phrased
this
it weird.
This is exactly why I'm out.
It's too cool. Too amazing.
I couldn't follow it. I feel like this movie makes me feel like the dumbest person in the world. And I love Inception. So I know it's not me because I get it. This one just went too far for me. I need to watch it again.
I've seen this movie, I'd say, about four or five times now. And it's still very difficult to follow. I think that Interstellar was like the chef's kiss when it comes to making a movie complicated, but still accessible. Like they did a good enough job until the end. Yeah. the ending, I believe it or not, I just watched this movie a couple days ago. The ending is starting to not bother me as much as it did when I first saw it. The whole love is the answer to everything. I don't know why we're talking about Interstellar when I'm supposed to be talking about Tenet.
I love the ending of Interstellar, but that is not a surprise.
Yeah, it's definitely not bothering me as much as it did. But Tenet, yeah, I think that Christopher Nolan kind of, you know, pushed the envelope a little too far. But it's still a remarkable movie, nonetheless. And it kind of saved the film industry during COVID, to let you know movie.
That's right. Yeah, single-handedly saved the film industry.
That's probably why I don't like it. It was the only movie I saw in the pandemic. And I just came out of it going, I risked COVID for that. I'm just confused.
I ate popcorn through a mask for this. I had it at number five. It is an incomprehensible film that I love. I don't think it actually makes sense. So Ian, I agree.
I think
it's
that's
not
where
you.
I'm at. Yeah.
I agree hurts. It's not you. I literally I have studied
you should know.
This movie. I have studied this movie frame by frame for the entire movie. And its conceptual idea of going backwards and forwards in time and using that information the way they do in the movie is self-contradictory. So the movie is a paradox. And I think you just have to accept this is a paradox. It doesn't make sense. And then just go with what the movie is doing, which, by the way, the movie educates you on this very early on and says, don't think about it. Just let it happen. And
that's
the
second that it lost me.
Right. That is Nolan saying, don't try to figure this out. And I think he knows, in essence, that
he
it doesn't
should know
make
me better.
Everything Nolan has taught us about his movies up until that point.
Yeah.
And he should just really know me better. He should know that that's not going to be something that I'm going to let fly. Especially with time travel. Well, because I love time travel.
Having said that, it does work surprisingly well. Even though it doesn't actually hold together, the forward-backward stuff in the way it's conceptually put together holds together really, really well. There's some interesting ways he uses that actually do make sense if the paradox didn't exist. But it does. It's
You're saying that on a technical scientific standpoint, it doesn't make sense, but the way it's used narratively pushes the story forward correctly.
And interestingly, and very cleverly. Yeah. Like, this, you know, it's a really smart movie that just doesn't feel like it has to be completely theoretically sound. So that's again, that's my take. So, but I do love the movie. I really do love it.
I think you've explained why I don't like it.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page. I think we're on the same page. All right. On to our number twos. What do you got, Ian?
Oh, me? Oppenheimer.
Me too.
It's my number two.
Number two.
Excellent.
We are too unanimous.
Yeah, we are. Too cool for school. Come on. It's Oppenheimer. I really just put it on there because you didn't invite me on the pod for uncovering that episode. I loved it. This is the quickest 3 hours that felt like 3 minutes. It went by so quick. It's such an incredibly well done biopic. Just excellent, outstanding. You don't even need the
big objectively wrong on that pronunciation, you know.
Biopic.
They're biopics. That is, they have never been biopics. Biopics is like a
biographical contact pictures.
Lens.
Biopic. That's what we call it. A biopic. It's a biopic. It's not it a is. Physio thing. Anyway, love it. Great movie. Outstanding.
Yeah, Andrew. Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I had it in number two as well. The Trinity scene is so anxiety inducing. Like, I know what's going to happen. I know it's a successful test. I know all of these things. But that entire sequence is just, you know, fourth gear. I guess that's the best way to explain it. It's fourth gear. Your adrenaline is rushing through the entire sequence. Christopher Nolan, you did it for your first R-rated film, you know. He didn't feel like he overused that rating in any way. Everything felt purposeful.
I agree. I know some people don't. I know some people think that the sexual stuff and the nudity I'm going to say superfluous. Gratuitous. I know some people believe that it was gratuitous. I actually think it really hits home for what he's trying to do about especially the scene in the boardroom. The scene in the boardroom is the most intense visual representation I have had for how the stripping of privacy feels.
Yes.
And I think it's better because of how raw it is. So,
it's the definition of show, don't tell.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
It really is.
Yes.
Yeah. For me, it is the best scene in the entire movie.
Yeah. I've never seen
somebody so raw and exposed portrayed in such a way before. It's a brilliant way of doing it.
I think it's not necessarily my favorite scene in the movie. There are other scenes that I think the scene in when after the bomb where he's in front of people and it's going from a crowd of, you know, thundering feet to flashes of, you know, people kissing. And then, you know, and I'm not going to go into all the details. I think that is just brilliant filmmaking. And there's so many things like that in this movie. This movie was revealing itself to me for weeks afterwards. The things that he's doing with the ideas of fission and fusion, there is a very, I believe, specific reason he called the two segments of this movie fission and fusion. And I believe the scene at the pond is a nuclear reaction, and the cascading atom that sets forth this whole other domino effect,
so clever.
Whether it was intended or not. It's just really, really brilliant stuff. The way the raindrops look like dropping bombs. I just like Nolan's brain. It connects with me in a really interesting way. And a lot of it is very clear on Oppenheimer, which, again, we talked about a lot of this on the review. So I'm always glad to bring it up again. All right, on to our number ones. Ian, what is your number one?
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
I have this. It wobbles between like my number one and number two favorite Nolan movies. And I'm fairly much on an island. People like Dunkirk, but it's not like really up there as anyone's favorite. I just think this is one of the tightest stories that Nolan has told, to be honest, outside of like Following. Is that the black and white one? That
his first one, yeah.
Yeah, the first one. I know you've got the weird time stuff where you have an hour a week, a day, whatever it is, and people get a little bit hung up on that. But it is the sound design on this film is visceral. It's so good. And you're just following this group of people through another famous point in history. Obviously, it's an excellent war movie without being too gratuitous, kind of with all of the explosions and killing and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great story. Those boats arriving, Kenneth Branagh's face, so good.
It was my first honorable mention. So yeah, I love Dunkirk. I think it's really, really, yeah. really good. Andrew, I think we probably have the same number one. Go ahead. What is yours?
Infinity War.
Infinity War. Yeah, is my number one as well. Talk about it.
Where is he? He's the voice of something. Is
he's the very first voice you hear in the entire movie. That's some nonsense. He's guardianship.
You cannot count that. That is absolute.
Ian, when it's your show, you can make the rules however you want. He is in that movie. It counts.
I'm leaving. Can I get out of this show? Does not count.
It does count.
Veto.
Veto. It is best ever movies Kenneth Branagh is in. He is in that movie.
It's not the spirit of the thing, isn't it? You're not going to talk about Kenneth
Branagh. The spirit of the thing.
The spirit of the game is best movie, not best
performance. Did you make the stars? Did you create the heavens?
This is some nonsense. What is the point? El Dorado should be talked about more than this movie.
He does just as much work in El Dorado as he does here. He's voice acting.
That's right. Why I had it at number five, not number one.
Yeah, this movie is remarkable.
It is remarkable. It is remarkable.
Yeah. It's remarkable for half
a movie.
We
talked about it a lot. Unless you have anything you'd like to add on the... Aaron.
No, I love it more and more every time I see it. I think it's really good.
First in your MCU ranking? Or do you still have the first Avengers?
No, I still have the first Avengers higher. Just for
you can't say the first Avengers because that could be Captain America. First Avenger,
the first Avenger, yeah. Which I also like more than most people.
It's just Star Wars, okay?
Yes, that's right, just Star Wars. Let's talk some honorable mentions. Andrew, why don't you give us the picks of the gurus?
I can do that. The third highest pick was Dunkirk.
Okay.
The second highest pick was a movie none of us even mentioned. That's Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Sure.
Yep. Honorable mentions.
I am not, as it is infamously known, I am not the biggest Harry Potter fan, but I do remember enjoying this movie more than most. So this is one with the big snake, right? The basilisk?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And the Cerberus and the flying car.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually reading the books right now for the first time. They're good.
You picked that and number one,
number one is Oppenheimer.
Yep. Yeah, good choice. Nice. Good choice. Yep. Honorable mentions, Ian. What do you got?
I had Chamber of Secrets and nothing else.
Nothing else you've seen. Anything else. All right. Well, I'm going to tell you one of my honorable mentions that I really do think you need to see. Maybe we'll do a Kenneth Branagh night and do Swing Kids in this one. Dead Again. Need to check out Dead Again, especially if you were looking for something a little more haunting and scary with your Haunting in Venice. Dead Again is a really interesting suspense horror thriller kind of fun thing. So
nice.
One more movie that we haven't mentioned. I'll just throw it out there real quick. Just because it's the most authentic version of the story, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Hmm.
You may not like the movie because it's not like what a lot of people expect Frankenstein to be, but it's the closest adaptation we've gotten to the book, which is a good book.
My research also said he was an extra in Chariots of Fire, so I wanted to mention Chariots of Fire as well.
Who wasn't?
Was he one of the runners?
Probably. I don't know. All right. Well, there you go. There's the best ever challenge. Let's get to the sift. Buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want people to know about? Ian, you're our guest, so you will go last. I will kick us off.
Do it.
In the pre-show, I hinted and teased that Star Wars would be a part of my buried treasure story. And it's because this is a movie that came out the week before Star Wars did. And absolutely bombed at the box office. And in the same way that Star Wars is often said to have kicked off summer blockbusters, the idea of big summer movies, this is kind of the final movie of an era of big budget, darker movies, not, you know, heroic characters. It is William Friedkin's Sorcerer, came out the week before Star Wars. This movie is amazing. This is one of those movies that you just have to stop every few minutes and go, how did they film that? How did that happen? Because Ian and I were texting on the night I was watching this, we both ended up watching it. So I know, Ian, you've seen this as well. But this movie has, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 set pieces that just kind of blew my mind. And I don't want to give any of it away. The visual you're seeing on the screen is one of them, that's, you know, of the truck that's tilting on a wooden bridge. The title is a little misleading. It's the name of a truck, and there is this idea of, you know, being cursed or those kind of things, but it's not a spiritual tale. This is a very direct task that's being handled here of transporting dynamite.
Is this based on a true story?
I believe so.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Maybe it is. Sorcerer is my buried treasure, and it's a huge, huge recommend. Ian, did you have anything you wanted to say about it?
Oh, no, you can't. I don't want to say anything about it because you just need to go in and watch it. But if you are of a nervous disposition, speak to your cardiologist or doctor first, because this is not a double screening movie. This is a you will be rewarded for watching every single second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a MacGyver scene in this movie that is just
so good.
No words are spoken for like 10 minutes and it's amazing. Like it's just, it's so good. So good.
And I couldn't guess where they were going with it until it happened. And then you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
I knew where they were going. Like, I actually had the thought, oh, why don't you just do that? And then they did what my brain said.
You so, nerd.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be fine in this situation, Aaron, I'm
absolutely
sure.
I would be. No, I would not be.
No, you
would not be.
I've seen you at the Hollywood sign.
Andrew, what is your buried treasure?
Real quick, I was looking up to see where you could watch Sorcerer.
I don't believe
you know where it-
I don't believe there's anywhere to watch it if you don't have a copy of it, so...
Yeah. Okay. Well, my buried treasure is the most unburied treasure in the history of unburied treasures. It's going to be Baldur's Gate 3.
Nice.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. The biggest video game in the world right now. If you haven't heard of it.
I haven't heard
of it. So basically, what's that?
I said it's completely missed me. I haven't heard of it.
You're joking, but you know I have no idea what this is.
You're lying.
Do you really not know what this is?
No clue. No clue what this is.
Where have you been?
In the place where I don't care what video games come out? I don't.
But you must have accidentally... Me and Danae have mentioned this game to you.
But you understand, like, saying a name of something doesn't mean I understand what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, sorry. My mistake.
Fair enough. So basically, for those of you like,
if I said something about a sports team or something, you wouldn't register that. You wouldn't.
Of course, I care about you as my friend, Aaron.
All right,
so
fair. That's fair. I have to care more.
It's important to you.
Tell me about this game that I already knew about and actually have been playing.
So this is the closest any video game has ever gotten so far to Dungeons and Dragons. Like, agree. It has dice rolls. It has every single thing that, like, mind flares, like, different races, different classes, everything that you the would spells? Expect to see from a 5e D&D campaign is in this, including all the adult-themed stuff that every single Dungeons & Dragons campaign eventually finds a way to sneak in, either mm-hmm. something sexual or wildly brutal, you know, like yeah. killing somebody in an extremely brutal way. All that stuff is in this, and I love it all the more for it. Right now, I've recreated my favorite D&D character that nice. I always play. So I have a tiefling bard, and he's going around, and he's causing all sorts of trouble. This game is hard. This yes. game is very hard.
This game
hard.
Is unforgiving if you error.
Yeah.
And start a fight yeah. you can't finish.
Save a lot. That's all I'll say. F5. Save your game
F5.
A lot.
Constant F5.
Yeah.
It's a quick save.
I like
if
F5.
If you've ever... Yeah, F5.
Fast 5? I thought Fast 5 was great.
Fast 5. Yeah, Fast 5 guys. 5 guys. But no, if you've been curious about D&D, but you've never had anybody to play with, this is your perfect end right here. You can learn the basics of how the system works. The graphics are good. The characters are fun. I think this is one of, if not the best game that's come out this year. It may
you
be
have
one
a dungeon
of the best
master
ever.
Of sorts.
Yeah, you can learn how to be a DM. You can learn everything from this.
Oh, so I meant that the game actually gives you a dungeon master of sorts. Because that was yeah, my biggest question, where I was like, but the Dungeon Master is a big part of D&D, and it manages
yeah, there's
to pull that off
a
as well.
Narrator who's the DM yeah. and guides you through everything. I love it. I really yeah. do.
It's really good.
I can't imagine a game less made for me, but...
Oh, you'd be paralyzed by this game.
Yeah,
I would be out of it.
I am
so, quick.
So thrilled that this is out there for people who would love it, and now I am well aware of it, now that it's been mentioned by a friend.
Well, Aaron, don't forget, you've actually played a D&D campaign at this point in your
Indeed.
Life. You've done it now.
Indeed, I have.
Mm-hmm.
With the gentleman sitting across from Indeed. Or I guess he's not sitting across yeah. from you, across the
Not today. Soon.
Ian, what
this
is your...
This is the first time I think my buried treasure has qualified as a buried treasure.
Oh,
I usually
nice.
Pick something that isn't a buried treasure. But yesterday, I watched a movie from 2013... called Europa Report. And I vaguely remember this coming out in 2013, but I just completely missed it. And this movie is completely made for me. This movie is so great. It's got middling reviews on IMDb and the internet and whatnot. I don't know why we aren't talking about this movie more. Actually, I think I do know. I think it's the finale, perhaps, but... This is a really, really cool story. The basic premise is it's the near future. We've discovered water on Europa, one of the moons that orbits Jupiter. And it's our best chance of finding life in the solar system, which is true today. It's absolutely the mm-hmm. most likely place that we're going to find bacteria or organisms of some sort, because it also has some heat in there as well. Now, for some reason, this movie decides that as a race, we've decided to skip going back to the moon. We've skipped Mars. We've skipped everything. And we've just put all of our chips into a manned mission to Jupiter. Like, forget a Mars base or anything. Now, all of this movie is a fictional documentary that is wrapped around found footage that's all inside the Europa space module. That's going over there. So it's all changing from cameras to cameras, but you kind of forget about that because it's done so well. It's not like shaky cam nonsense. It's just observing these people on the mission. As you'd expect, stuff goes sideways. They have to the Martian themselves out of some predicaments. And there's just an excellent mystery that goes all the way through the movie as well. Just great, great sci-fi story. It's 90 minutes. It feels like a long episode of Star Trek, where like maybe the Star Trek, like one of the crews find these logs and are trying to uncover the mystery. I love the way it's framed. And yeah, it kept me hooked the entire time. So I think more people should watch this movie.
Very nice. That is Europa Report, available for free on Prime here in the States, or video demand. I think it's like $1 to rent. Baldur's Gate 3 is available for PC and PS5. Ensorcerer can be rented on VOD for $3, and it's well worth the $3 to rent that.
Have you guys seen Europa Report, or do you remember it at all?
I think that's the first time I've heard of this movie.
That's incredible.
I'd heard of it. It was on my...
but I didn't know what Baldur's Gate 3 was, so don't come to me.
Yeah, my goodness. Amazing. I really liked it. I enjoyed it. It's good stuff.
There you go. Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast. Yeah, thank you for staying up till 3 in the morning, Ian, or whatever it is.
You are not kidding. It's 2:46.
Yeah. We're there to do a podcast. We really do appreciate it, and appreciate you being here. And thank you for joining us for SifPop today. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thanks to Ian Whittington for coming by again. Ian, where would you like to point at for people to come find you?
Come hang out on Twitter, I guess, at Whitsend. And if you like Star Trek, or if you don't like Star Trek, come and listen to Captain's Pod, a Star Trek companion podcast. We're currently going through season 4 of Lower Decks as it lands, with Danae, a relapsed Trek fan who's trying to find her way back into the final frontier.
There you go. Check that out.
I actually had that written down for once.
Check that out wherever you get your podcasts. Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members. Thank you for supporting what goes on here and keeping us going. That support starts at $3 a month, and you get access to bonus episodes at different levels, as well as some other fun perks. You can find more at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can actually email us, feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than getting a good cup of tea in a Naples coffee shop. We will be back next week with more movies. Playing catch-up probably still. Maybe going with a couple movies we haven't seen. And then also anything new that might hit our fancy. So we'll see you then.
Bye.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.